Hi viewers, welcome back to the multi-million dollar multifamily mindset podcast. And I'm your host, Miana Epps, also known as the Property Princess. And today we have a very special guest with us. Not only is she a friend and a valuable resource of mine, but she is a residential and commercial lender specializing in creative financing. Alexandra, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Her name is Alexandra Mari, and I met her about a year ago at a meetup here in the Bay Area. And since then, she's been a very valuable resource. Like I said, I usually call on her with questions about my own financing or trying to assist the client. So Alexandra, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and what you do?
Thank you for having me, Yana. I've been financing for the past 20 years. I've done real estate, property management, and financing. And financing is definitely my passion in life. I do it all day, every day. And my kids always say, Mom, you work too much. But I don't look at it as work. I look at it as I'm helping people build their dreams. I create opportunities for people. I especially like to work with people who are the underdogs. People who may have been turned down by other lenders, maybe they had difficulties in the past in regarding their financials or credit, BK, anybody who really just needs my help. I love working with people like that.
Yeah, I've heard you tell a few stories at different meetups about special circumstances that you somehow magically resolved. I think you're pretty creative when it comes to working your magic. So Alexandra's gonna help us understand the difference between commercial lending and residential lending. So there are some major differences and she's gonna break them down for us. Alexandra, what would you say is the biggest difference?
The biggest difference between commercial and residential is that on the residential side, 75% is on the borrower. Whereas on the commercial side, 75% of the underwriting is on the asset, the commercial property. Okay. So that's the biggest, huge difference. Also, with residential, you can go in with zero down on a residential property. I'm doing a loan right now for 103% first-time home buyer, zero down plus some. With commercial, you're looking at 30, 35% down, and they're looking at your experience, property manager or investor as well.
I just want to jump in and clarify for those who may not be familiar with what you're talking about. When you say 75% of the focus is on the borrower, when she's talking about residential lending, they're looking at your personal income and your personal ability to pay the loan. And in the reverse, when you're talking about commercial, they're looking at 75% of the property's income producing abilities and less at the borrower.
Correct. You're absolutely right. Okay. So that's the major difference. So if you want, I can kind of go into each one individually.
Sure.
Then if you guys have any questions, I will be more than happy to answer, via social media, or you can just give me a call and we can discuss your specific scenario.
Sure. Let's talk about the residential loans first. So you said 75% of the focus is on me as the borrower, and they're looking at the property too, to a certain extent. But as a borrower, how should I prepare for a residential loan? What do I need to have in order? What documents do I need? And how much should I expect to put down? I just heard you say you just did a deal over 100% loan to value. So that means I would literally bring nothing to the table.
Literally nothing to the table. That's the extreme case. Okay, what documents do you need? On a conventional, let's say 20% down or less or more, it doesn't matter. They're looking at people's income taxes for the past 2 years. They're looking at credit reports, and you want to work with a broker who can pull your credit and at the same time shop for the best rate for you. So don't try to pull your own credit. It's always good to monitor your credit, but I have a different model as a mortgage broker than you do as a pedestrian. If you get a free report, we're not gonna have the same credit score. So that's very, very common. When people ask me on the residential side, I got 800 from Karma. I'm like, I'm at 720 and that's what we're gonna use.
Yeah, so just speaking on that point that you just made, There's a benefit in working with a broker that has access to different programs and different banks versus walking into Bank of America and trying to work directly with one bank with a set amount of options, right?
Absolutely. The biggest challenge that borrowers have all the time is that they go into Bank of America or any other lender and they get turned down because the person who's actually taking your application has no idea about underwriting. Compared to me or somebody like me with a lot of experience, when you come to me, I'm going to find the right product for you, depending on what your goals are. And I'm motivated to help you, whereas the person at the bank is just sitting there collecting a paycheck. That's okay. The biggest difference. And I can shop, you know, 20 banks at one time, whereas they are only have that one product or two products that is good for you.
And with those one credit report too.
Yeah. So let's go back to income. So they're looking at tax returns, pay stubs. Big thing about pay stubs is if you get RSUs, which is very popular today, if you get stock options, if you get commissions, overtime, bonuses, always, always save your last pay stub of that year. So in 2019, I'm asking people for December 15th pay stub or December 31st pay stub. Because what we're doing on the residential side is we're comparing what you earned year to year on those extra income sources, not just your base salary. So a lot of people don't know about that.
So is that a specific ask for this month of January in case someone hasn't gotten their W-2s back? Or do you always want to see the last paycheck stub?
Yeah, so if Yana worked at Google, for example, I would say, do you get bonus income? And she would say, yes. I'd say, how much did you get? Oh, I don't remember. Well, then I'm going to ask you, what was your bonus in 2018? What was your bonus in 2019? And I would average those two. Now, if in 2019 you made less on the bonus than 2018, what I would do is I would only be able to use the 2019 divided by 12, and that's your income, extra income source.
Right.
So a lot of people don't know that. Yeah.
It has to be trending upwards to be able to use the prior years, because I've always earned commissions. So unfortunately, I learned that the hard way. Well, not the hard way.
Yeah. So you don't want to go down in commissions. I know you don't have control when you work for Google or Facebook or one of those companies or any company really. But if it's at all possible, try to keep either going up in bonuses or commissions, or at least stay at the same level. So we can average that out in the last 2 years.
Great. Tell us about loan programs and how much, how did you reach that point where you were able to finance over 100%? What program was that?
This is CalHFA, so it's CalHFA program, and they will lend. And there's conventional CalHFA, and there's FHA CalHFA, two different ones. And I actually used the FHA one because my property type was very specific, and I knew that because the borrower was very upfront. It's very, very important when you're working with a broker, you have to tell the truth. A lot of people will not tell me everything up front, and then I have to scramble and fix it.
Like a defense attorney.
Exactly. I'm working for you. The bank is just the vehicle. You're my client. I'm working for you. The bank will pay me, so don't worry about my fee. But if you're not telling me the truth, I can't help you 100%. Or I have to scramble and fix your problems. So the client came to me, and she said, well, Alexandra, we have the single family home. We created this ADU and right away. Is it warrantable? Well, not really. I said, okay, well, how are we going to do this? So I compared CalHFA to conventional to FHA, and FHA, guess what? Gets it. So I try to fix all the problems up front. I want to submit it once and I want to get it approved. I don't want to have to submit it 3-4 times. But I will if I have to.
Why was it more suitable for FHA in this case?
FHA accepts non-conforming units in the property, whereas conventional would be telling you, remove this, remove that, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's one program. I also do stated income. A lot of people, like right now I'm doing a hard money loan for a person who just finished a chapter 13 bankruptcy. They want to consolidate all their, you know, debt that is outside of their credit report, that's not reporting, like private loans. They want to consolidate.
Okay.
The people that help them go through that process, and they have a lot of equity. Zero FICO score. I haven't seen that in a long
time.
Zero. Nothing. Nada, nothing. Ничего.
Wow, I've never heard of that.
Yeah. And she called me on Saturday, and we're halfway done on a hard money loan, $200,000 on a bank statement program. Rate is 7%, interest only 2 years. And I'm right after we do this loan, we can consolidate everything. And this is a second lien. I'm leaving the first alone because she has a 4% rate. I don't want to ruin it for her.
So let's take a step back. You said that you're able to help somebody with a zero FICO score that has a lot of equity. I'm assuming that these private loans that she has were tied to properties with equity in the houses, and that's like what you leverage?
So I know of one private note that she got, but she put it on her mother's house.
Okay.
The other ones are not recorded. These are just, you know, some sort of loans that she has. And this is a primary home business loan that I'm doing because she has a bunch of equity in her house.
Zero
FICO score, no income, you know, from tax returns.
Got it. I was wondering what you leveraged. So it's her personal property that you were able to leverage to take the hard money.
A business, which is very, very difficult to do because most hard money lenders, they get super, super regulated, and they're not supposed to do residential loans. The way to go around it is to work with somebody like me who knows the loopholes.
Right.
In the business.
Sounds like it. Lots of loopholes.
Lots of exciting and fun stuff. But then I do those 20% loans too. You know, I'm not opposed to those as well. You know,
tell us about the commercial side of things.
So a couple of recent cases on commercial side. So I called a borrower who I've known for like 15 years, called me and said, Alexandra, I want to purchase a building, 6 units, mixed use in San Francisco, just recently, this week. I said, okay, send me the marketing material on it. Because usually on a commercial, they really do a good job on the marketing package. They tell you what the current rent rolls are, what's the projected, you know, what are the expenses. They do a really thorough job that the lenders need. So right. He sent over the marketing package. I took a look. I went to 3 different lenders. And guess what? I got 3 different complete scenarios.
Approvals?
Based on the income of the property. So going back to our first point, most lenders are going to look at the cash flow of the property, the debt service coverage of the property. So one lender took a look at the property and said, I could lend 50%. It's a $2 million purchase. And because of the current net rental income, they could only qualify the property on 50%. So they would have to put $1 million down. Okay. I got another quote for 70% loan to value ratio. So you're looking at 30 to 35% on a commercial, as opposed to residential, it's only zero. The biggest challenge also, a lot of people don't know, I want to give you this inside information. When a bank looks at the asset, they want to see 3 years tax returns for the property. So if the current seller, you know, is an entity and they report all their expenses and income, we just need to see that one schedule. So let's say Schedule E on their personal tax returns will show a rental schedule of all the income and the expenses for the past 3 years.
Right.
If they don't have it, then it's not going to be right for that A paper bank. And I have multiple different levels of banks that would lend on, you know, depending on the property, depending on the location. Location is huge for commercial lenders, because there are commercial lenders who only will lend very high loan to value on San Francisco properties.
So, for example, A paper loans in residential has a lot to do with your FICO, but you're saying in commercial it has more to do with the location and the property's income producing abilities, right?
Yes, that's 75% weight. And the next thing that they look at on the commercial side is, do you have experience as a landlord, or do you have a property manager involved from the get-go? Because a lot has to do with your experience. How are you going to run this business? You're buying a business, you're buying the tenants. So they want to make sure that you know how to run that business. If you don't have the qualifications and you're coming in brand new, then you should definitely look into a property manager for at least the first year, because then you're going to learn the ropes. And after the first year, you're going to be able to take over if you want to.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize there's a big difference between owning and operating. So it's one thing to buy a property, but in commercial, you're buying a business and you have to know how to run that business after acquisition. So there's a lot to learn on that side, right?
Definitely. And even if you just buy one condo or one single family home, you have to know the laws in that particular location so you know how to run your business. Because, you know, from San Francisco to Berkeley, they're completely different laws, and you have to really, really educate yourself.
Yeah, we have really strict landlord laws in this entire state of California, but mm-hmm. we won't talk about that today.
No. Yeah, so who's managing the property, the location, and what does the property produce? Those are the big things, 75%. 25% is you, the borrower, the FICO score, the income, the assets. They want to see reserves, very, very important. You can have a 500 FICO score, but if you've got $1 million in the bank and you can carry any negative equity or negative cash flow each month, you'll probably get that loan.
They want to see 6 months reserves, right?
Per property.
Right.
Per property. And that's principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, or HOA.
Okay, and then let's talk about time frames. So what's the biggest difference in time frames of trying to obtain a commercial loan and residential loan?
Great question. So residential loan, you need 30 days in escrow. For me, I can get a loan done in 21 days or less for residential. Loan contingency and appraisal contingency, I can get it done in 7 days. On the commercial side, the appraisal itself takes 30 days. So you want to have a 60-day escrow, because we submit all the documents. It has to go through underwriting. It's a very scrupulous, intense process for the commercial side, and it takes longer, way longer. So, you know, 30 days before we even get the appraisal report back, and then you have to pay for it up front. It's very expensive. So it can run anywhere between $2,500 to $4,500, depending on the property. Mm-hmm. On the appraisal side, on the commercial property, whereas residential is 500. So 30 days on the residential, 60 days escrow for the commercial.
I asked you that question because it's a good thing for people to know when you're structuring your contracts, and you need to put the right timeframes and contingencies into your terms. So something to be aware of, guys. Also, Alexandra, a piece of advice that you would give a borrower preparing for one type of loan or the other.
Best advice I can give you is find the best broker you can in your area. Go and interview 3 people that you really like or that you don't know and you want to see what they're all about. And go with your gut feeling. Go with the person who's going to, who's going to do the best job for you. Somebody who is motivated, picks up the phone, is a great communicator, and has a lot of experience. You want somebody who has been through, the war previously and knows how to get you out if that happens. If there's no reason to, have to rescue you, great. That's wonderful. But you want somebody who's going to commit to you, not to
pay. Hey, I think I know somebody like that. How would they get in touch with you if they want you to represent them?
you know, I like the old fashioned way. Just pick up the phone. I actually answer my phone. It's 415-608-0734. You could also text me. You could also email me. I'm sure Yana will put my information out there. That's but, it. You know, let's go back to the basics. Just have a human interaction with somebody. And I may not be right for you. So that's why I want you to really do your due diligence. I don't accept everybody, because if I don't feel something with you, I'm not going to be able to do the best job. Maybe somebody else will.
Great. Well, thank you so much for answering all those questions. You guys, we're so lucky to have Alexandra as a resource. She's actually agreed to do a 5-part series with us. So the next time we meet with her, she'll be discussing another topic related to lending. So again, Alexandra, we couldn't appreciate you more. Thank you so much for your time and expertise.
Thank you, Yana, for having me. And I hope to talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining. Hope to see you again.